Nightlife Science.
Yes, joining us this evening, Charlie Lineweaver, who's an he's a scientist with an interest in all things extraterrestrial. He's at the Research School of Earth Sciences at the Australian National University. Charlie, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Earthling.
Speaking of Earthlings, finding a habitable planet and becoming a multi-planet species. You know, there's lots of talk about it. Elon Musk has already put his car in the garage on Mars. Well, maybe it's not there yet, but he says he'd like to go. Why are we looking for another Earth anyway? Who cares?
Well, I guess it depends on whether you care about, you probably have children, Phil, right?
Yes.
You're going to die and they're going to be around. Do you care whether they go extinct or whether there's a war? Or how about your grandchildren? Do you care whether the humans go extinct in 50 or 100 years? Or let's say in 1,000 years, do you care about your great-great-great-grandchildren? I mean, it's a perpetual thing that comes up. Do you want to looking for short-term gain, in which, yay, today I'm going to get this, or are you going to invest in the future? And looking for a habitable planet, you could call it the ultimate investment in the future. Although, one problem with this is that we know one of the things that I study is the end of the universe, and that's coming. And that's in about many, many billions of years. But let's talk about the finding a habitable planet before World War III comes about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I guess I think enough of human beings that I'm hopeful that we can find other habitable planets. But that, of course, that includes making a moon base, making a base on Mars, then maybe Mercury, then maybe the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, and then finally getting to other planets around other stars.
We can't make a base on Mercury. It's too hot.
No. It gets hot in the sun and very cold in the shade. So all you need is a little shade and you can stay as cold as you want.
Well, is that right, really?
That is right. That's right.
What's the one side?
As a matter of fact, there's even water. There's ice on Mars ice on Mercury in the permanently shadowed regions for the same reason that there's water ice.
You're kidding.
I didn't
realize that.
I'm not kidding.
So hang on. That's right, because Mercury only has one face to the sun, doesn't it?
You know what? I'm thinking. You know what? I think it rotates three times for every 1 year it goes around.
Okay.
So I'm not quite sure. It's called tidally locked. Right. The moon is tidally locked to the Earth, and so that's why we can only see one face of the moon. But I think that's not the same for Mercury.
Mm. Anyway, there's been some developments, haven't they, in the search for another world. This week, the Hubble Space Telescope has been looking for, not so many years ago we couldn't find planets. Now we know, there are hundreds of planets we know about, but finding an atmosphere around them is not easy. This week the Hubble Space Telescope had some developments in relation to puffy hydrogen atmospheres.
Yes. Well, you know what? I mean, when we say we're looking for an Earth-like planet, what does that mean? Well, Earth is a rocky planet, and you might be aware that Jupiter and Saturn and Uranus and Neptune are not rocky planets. They're essentially made out of hydrogen and helium.
Yeah.
They're balls of gas. And so if we have a rock that has a puffy hydrogen atmosphere around it, well, then it's really a mini Neptune or a mini Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not interested in those because we want a rocky surface with water on it on the surface, and we want to have a thin atmosphere that's not choking us with hydrogen. We're not even sure that Jupiter has a surface, if you want to know the truth. It's so much gas there.
I've always wondered about that. If you dropped your keys at the surface of Jupiter, do they fall all the way through to the other side?
Yeah, you know what? I wish I knew the answer to that. I think the answer is the gas gets denser and denser and denser and then turns into metallic hydrogen in a way that might be so gradual that you wouldn't notice it. I mean, we're used to, there's air and then there's the water and then there's a rock. Those are three well-separated phases of matter on the Earth. But, you can get gas that's so dense that it starts to feel like water, but it isn't. And water that's so dense that it starts to feel – so there's a continuum there that I think you'd experience with your keys.
Anyway, the Hubble Space Telescope found no puffy hydrogen around two habitable zone planets.
Yeah, why this is interesting. First of all, about a year and a half ago, we discovered this TRAPPIST system with seven planets in it. And it's not too far away. It's about 40 light years. And seven planets, and they're so close together that they are, some of them, two or three of them, are in what's called the habitable zone. That's close enough to the star such that the star's warmth would provide enough the heat so water could be liquid at the surface. That's kind of like the habitable zone. But now the question is, wait a minute, do these planets have atmospheres at all? Maybe they don't have any atmospheres, in which case it'll be like the moon. You know, the moon is in the habitable zone of the sun, but there's no water on it, so we don't call it habitable. So similarly, these planets might have no atmosphere, or they might have so much atmosphere, they'd be like mini Jupiters or mini Neptunes. And that is, you'd lose your keys and they didn't have a rocky surface. So that's the Hubble Space Telescope, for the first time, was able to look at these planets as they transited across their host star and saw that there was no puffy hydrogen atmosphere. If they had seen that, then these planets would have blocked out more light. And it didn't block out more light, so therefore, no hydrogen puffy atmosphere. Therefore, it's either a rocky planet like ours with a normal Earth-like atmosphere, or it doesn't have an atmosphere at all. That's the extent of our knowledge about these things. We're just beginning. This is a new, really new field.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Well, I mean, of course, it was exciting, wasn't it, too, in the recent weeks when Elon Musk launched his Falcon Heavy launch. I mean, it was quite a bit of showmanship. The big rocket, which worked, and at least two bits of it landed back on the Earth safely too.
Yes.
And then famously, of course, it was carrying a payload of his red sports car, his electric sports car, which was launched, supposedly on its way to Mars, but I think may have hit the asteroid belt instead.
Phil, you don't hit the asteroid belt. You know how hard it is to hit the asteroid belt? It's mostly empty, 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 empty space.
Okay. But was it what was it all about? Was it a waste of money? Was it a huge marketing stunt for Tesla cars, or what was it?
Well, you know what? I like Elon Musk, and he's got a sense of humor. And that's something that NASA and ESA and all the other space agencies in the world, they don't really have that. And they're not billionaires, so they can't kind of throw money at interesting projects. So not, hey, let's launch a giant donut into space. you can do all kinds of stupid stuff when you have – I mean, when you have billions of dollars, it's hard to waste – you know, millions. It's like you and I could throw money away if they were only dollars, right? But if we were making 1,000 times more, we could throw $1,000 away.
Yeah.
And so he's throwing away, I guess, billions of dollars. But it's kind of like an art form. I remember there's some artists who build giant curtains that go for 1,000 kilometers or something, and they call it, oh, this is art. And I say, well, that's a waste of money. I'd rather see a red sports car and with a star man with David Bowie singing, "Is There Life on Mars?" It's fun. It's inspiring. And that is just, hey, it's a hoot, it's called. You know, but one thing, did you notice that when he was being interviewed, he's such a good marketer and he's not wearing any makeup, Phil. He invests almost zero money in personal makeup. And I think a lot of celebrities invest a lot of money. Like Donald Trump probably spent thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars on his makeup, his hair job.
That's true. Musk does have a serious purpose, doesn't he? I mean, this reusable rocket which he's developed, I mean, it does seem to work.
Oh, yes. And matter of fact, the price of getting into space just with this heavy Falcon just reduced by a factor of about 6.
Really?
So you can imagine how much more driving you would get done, at least if petrol prices were the obstacle. If petrol prices went from $1.50 a liter to 25 cents a liter. You say, hey, let's go ride. Let's ride over here. Let's drive over here. You'd take a lot more trips. If you were hurting for money, and that's most space agencies are hurting for money, and launch prices. And when you reduce the launch price by a factor of 6, you're doing something to increase the access of humans to space.
This is a real quantum leap, is it? This rocket.
I think it will be, yes. And matter of fact, I think NASA, a lot of NASA, NASA has been doing might be undermined. NASA is supporting this because they want private enterprise to take over and make things cheaper and And I guess it's reusable. I mean, the reusability has always been something that Elon Musk has pushed again and again and again. And, you know, it's much more reusable, for example, than the shuttle. I bet these Falcon rockets can be used more than the shuttles could.
Yeah,
the shuttle,
yeah.
I guess, was much more expensive and it could only be used, I don't know, 10 or 20 times. Oh, yeah. These are going to be more reusable, I think.
Yeah. All right. Now, tell me about the attempts to contact Oumuamua. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's Oumuamua.
Oumuamua. Okay.
Oumuamua.
What is it? What have they been trying to do?
About a few months ago, for the first time, humanity detected a large object that came from another planetary system.
Really?
It came to us from outer space. It's something that it didn't come from our solar system because you know how we tell that? We see how fast it's going. And if it's going so fast that it's on its way in, it's going out. You know, and we knew it was going out. And so, hey, this came from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Every other object in the solar system is moving much slower and therefore it's bound to the sun. The gravitational field to the sun and its velocity is not high enough to carry it away. And so this thing's come zooming in and people detect it on its way out. This is detected at the University of Hawaii, a program called the Pan-STARRS program.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, look at that. There's an object on its way out. It's going so fast. We know it came from elsewhere.
Wow. So it's a visitor from outer space.
It's a visitor from another planetary system. Outer space is empty, and so you don't get visitors from empty, but it had to have come from another planetary system.
So what is it? Is it a big rock?
Well, it's interesting in the sense that it is 400 meters long and about 40 meters wide, so it's kind of like a cigar.
Right.
Shaped thing. And people saw this cigar shape and said, that's got to be a spaceship or a rocket ship of some kind. But the problem was that this thing was tumbling end over end. So if it is a rocket ship, the crew are kind of lost.
Whereabouts is it? Is it, Charlie?
Well, right now it's probably as far away as Jupiter, I think.
Okay.
So it's on its way out of the solar system. While it was closer, and maybe even today, but I don't think they're looking at it still today. Mm. They had radio telescopes from Parkes, but most prominently from the Greenback Telescope in the U.S. And they said that they had enough sensitivity that if there were a mobile phone on Oumuamua, that they would be able to detect it. And so the idea is, well, if it's shaped like a cigar and no other object in our solar system is shaped like that. That's kind of another weird.
So that's the weird thing. Okay.
That's a very.
So we don't know anything about it other than that, really.
We know it seems to be a rock. It seems to have come from another planetary system. It's tumbling, and it doesn't give off any signals, and so it's probably not a rocket ship from another alien civilization.
And thank heavens it didn't hit us.
That's an interesting comment because. The program, the instrument that detected this, I mentioned Pan-STARRS, this thing was developed in order to find objects that might hit Earth.
Okay.
And so we're hunting for objects that could hit the Earth and keep us from going extinct.
All right. Just finally, before we go, the Winter Olympics course is on. If why, in a scientific terms, why is ice slippery anyway?
Well, you may notice that when you have an ice cube in your glass of water, that the ice cube floats.
Yes.
All right. Now, that should – whenever you see that, you say, whoa, that's unusual because most liquids, when they freeze, the solid is denser than the liquid.
Yeah.
And so the solid doesn't float. It sinks.
Yeah.
And so almost every other liquid does that. And so ice is unique in that way. And that property is related to the property that when you have ice and you have your ice skates on,
mm-hmm.
Now when you're standing on your ice skates, that's putting an awful, awful, awful lot of pressure on that blade.
Mm-hmm.
And that pressure, when you increase the pressure on ice, it turns into liquid. So for the split second that your ice blade is putting that incredibly high pressure on the ice, it's turning into liquid. It's kind of like putting a little layer of oil underneath. And then when you pass, the pressure goes away and it turns back into ice again. So that property of ice is almost unique and it's related very closely to the property of ice floating in its own liquid.
Charlie, excellent to talk as always. Thank you.
All right. Then try skiing. I mean, ice skating. Try ice skating on dry ice. If you have some dry ice around, try it.
Thanks, Charlie. Charlie Lineweaver from the ANU.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.